So what I'd like to do today is move the theme a little forward that I started last night, the idea of it's possible for human beings to overcome polarity. And I used last night two poles of fundamentalism, which I said was kind of a queen energy. Everybody's in the hive. Everybody's part of the club. Everybody belongs together. And the king energy, which is, this is my personal vision. This is the way it has to be. And if you don't agree with it, you're out of the kingdom. You're banished. Those two poles live in every soul. And the goal of higher initiation science, as it's called, or mystery wisdom, is to somehow bring those two together in an individual person in dialogue with each other in my own individual soul. That's really the purpose of higher learning. It's not basically to get a job or to have everybody think you're cool. It's to go down into your own dark place where you harbor fear and doubt and abiding belief that everyone else is sort of out to get you or wrong somehow, down into that place and find that there are a number of players down there, a number of voices. One of them is the queen, which is everybody who's not in the club is not okay. The other is the king. It's my way or the highway. And then last night I mentioned two other voices. One was the witness, and then the joker, or the trickster. And they are beings within each individual who Jung called them archetypes. Carl Jung called them archetypes. And the purpose of higher knowledge is to get them to speak to each other in such a way that they work out the problem for why I need to be on Earth. And everybody who is on Earth has that as a task, no matter what you do. If you're a cab driver in New York, or you're the CEO of a multinational or whatever, you have the same problem. We all have the same problem, and that's to get these voices to somehow communicate to each other so that my true being, who I really am as a person, shines through all of those voices and begins to speak to the world about my particular incarnation and why I'm here on the earth. And fundamentally, the difference between the way it used to be when I explored that in my soul in the ancient times, people have been doing this since the very beginning. And the way I do it today is that today I have to keep in focus something that was not possible in the ancient world. And that is personal freedom. So in the ancient world, most people were not free to do most things. Today, a lot of the freedoms we have would be considered unthinkable in the ancient world. So just to give you a really good example, if you were the firstborn in a family, you had to do what your parents did. If I lived in the ancient world, I wouldn't be standing here speaking to you. I would be a butcher. My father was a butcher, a meat cutter. There'd be no way for me in the social context to escape being a meat cutter because that's what my father did. And what your mother did is what you did. Occasionally, there were certain people who evolved themselves to the point where they would do other things. They were curers or healers or priests or people like that, but they were considered to be a little odd and a little strange. They had to go in their own community. But if you lived in the regular world, you had to abide by these laws of the culture. You did what everybody else did. In China and Japan, they say, the nail that sticks up gets hammered down. Well, if you say that to a modern person in the West, well, if you stick your head up, you get hammered down. They'll give you many, many examples of people who have stuck their head up, been hammered down, and keep sticking their head up, and then finally make a change in the world. That comes under the category, what we could generally call freedom. Now, there's one thing that limits human freedom, and that is fear. So fear is a force in the soul that limits the potential of an individual to fulfill their destiny. Freedom is a force in the soul that allows an individual to fulfill their particular destiny. And the dialogue in a modern soul is about freedom and fear as two very basic polarities within the polarities of the voices that I've already mentioned. So I'd like to bring a few quotes to you to be little seed points here, little talking points. Some quotes about this issue of fear and freedom, because both of these things, freedom and fear, point to the potential to overcome the darkness in myself. There's an old saying in the I Ching, the Book of Changes: get yourself in order, and your family in order, and your state in order, but do it in that order. So don't try to get your state in order before you've got your own ducks in a row in your own life. Because what you're going to do is you drag the whole world into chaos out of your own misunderstanding. That's a very old saying. Get yourself in order, and your family in order, and then your state in order, in that order. If you can't order yourself and your family, don't go into politics. Don't go into the social realm. Don't become a CEO of a multinational. That's what the old world believed. And we could take some stock in that today, I think. So I'd like to read a few quotes about some people who have dealt with this issue of fear and freedom and gave it a particular context. The first one is from Al Gore, who gave a speech in San Francisco not too long ago about issues of threats to the Constitution. I think he talked to a group of lawyers there. And the speech he gave was online. It was a fabulous talk. It was really well done. And in here he says, fear drives out reason. Fear suppresses the politics of discourse and opens the door to the politics of destruction. Justice Brandeis, who was a justice of the Supreme Court, Justice Brandeis once wrote, "Men feared witches and then burnt women." Powerful. Men feared witches and then burnt women. The founders of our country faced dire threats. If they failed in their endeavors, they would have been hung as traitors. The very existence of our country was at risk. And yet, in the teeth of those dangers, our founding fathers insisted on establishing the Bill of Rights. The Bill of Rights is what ensures that you and I have freedom. So here were men who were banding together to create a country that had a whole other direction from everything that was going on in the old world, based on the freedom of the individual to act. And their very lives were at stake, because they would be hung as traitors to the crown. And yet, in this duress, in this time of stress, they wanted to bequeath to the people who followed them a whole document on the assertion of individual rights and freedom. It's the very bedrock of this country. And it was done at a time when people's lives were threatened tremendously. The British were actually marching on the Capitol. They were burning buildings in Washington. This is not, you know, like, well, maybe somebody's going to blow off somebody here. This is, they were actually marching on Washington to burn the Capitol. So these men were in very dire straits. And yet they wanted to ensure that for the future, there was this thing called freedom, the rights of the individual, the Bill of Rights. So that's one quote from Al Gore. And the other is from Thich Nhat Hanh. And this is where I'd like to enter into the problem of freedom and license. Thich Nhat Hanh, in order to rally people, governments need enemies. They want us to be afraid. They want us to hate. They want us to hate so that we will rally behind them. And if they do not have a real enemy, they will invent one in order to mobilize us. Now, what these two people are speaking about is a kind of inner state that a modern human expects to be living in, this state of freedom. If you travel around in the world a little bit, and some of you are from other countries, you know that the freedom that people have here to travel, to do whatever they want, is quite rare in the world. There are a lot of restrictions on people in many other places. And this is a great gift, but it also carries with it a problem. I mean, Janis Joplin says, if you ain't got nothing, you ain't got nothing to lose. So if you have freedom, you have the greatest thing in the world to lose. It's the greatest gift that we could have as a nation, as people, is freedom. And so there is a tremendous amount of fear and anxiety around the possibility of losing it. And that anxiety is the sort of the issue, that fear is the issue of the way in which we are manipulated or mobilized, in the words of Thich Nhat Hanh, to do certain things, to believe certain things, to label certain people as good or bad or whatever. And then that restricts their freedom out of fear. Now, this has always been the case in the ancient world. If you were from a different tribe, you were from a different tribe. And it's like gangs today. If you're from a different gang, the purpose of me dealing with you is to, liquidate you or to terminate you if you're from a different side of the street. But that is tribal, and that's the old rule. The new rule is we are all free individuals, and we have to respect each other. And our biggest fear is that you will not respect who I am and my viewpoint. In the gang world, this is called dissing. You diss me, and if you diss me, it means that I have to maybe kind of do a drive-by on you, because you have dissed my being. But here we get to this question I posed last night, the difference between an image and a being. And the task of the modern person is to develop faculties in themselves to be able to differentiate. So if somebody disses me, my being is still intact. They may have dissed my image, but my being is still intact. And that line of being able to find that has a lot to do with humor. I'm sure Ronald will deal with that. You need to get right up to that edge with humor, where you're kind of getting in the edge. There's a wonderful website. It's called the Southern Cross Review. And they have this an excerpt on there from Stephen Colbert, is a comic, Stephen, who went to the White House to the press banquet. If you've read that one, it's like, whoa, man, this guy has, boo, he is, you know, all these big shots are sitting there, and he's going, going down there in the name of humor. So this is the fool. The king has to suffer the fool. because the fool knows well enough to go at the image, but to stay away from dissing the being. If the fool disses the king's being, he's dead. If he disses the king's image, everything's fine. And that is a survival skill for modern people. So I'd like to give you a few pictures around this of sort of the problem. It's a problem in the will, and this, if fear is a problem in the will, what happens is when I'm afraid of losing something, I'm afraid of doing something which may cause you to move to make me lose what I'm afraid of losing. So I try to dance to accommodate my will to see if my will can match your will so that we can kind of dance around each other. And this is a crazy little relationship between the witness, last night I spoke about the witness, and the joker or the trickster. The witness will always tell us exactly what is happening with no editing. That's the purpose of that little inner voice. It says, this is what's happening, this is what's happening. In the kahuna lore, or in the huna language in Hawaii, the kahunas are the teachers. The kahunas have a concept. They call it the aumakua. And it's kind of like what we would call an oversoul. And the aumakua is a being that lives in every person that will tell them the truth, even if it's tough. The way the kahunas say is that in us is a parent who would never lie to us. And everybody has a voice in them who would never lie to you. And it's continually monitoring things, going, this is what's happening, this is what's happening, this is what's happening, without saying, and therefore, and therefore, and therefore. And the exercise that we did last night was just a little taste of the possibility of strengthening that voice. This is what's happening. This is what's happening. So when I asked you to pay attention to the feelings that were happening when you were engaged in rock, scissors, paper, that was to try to get you in contact with this voice, the witness. The witness says, this is what's happening now. You just won, so you feel like this. This is what's happening now. You just lost, so you feel like this. That's constantly going on below the level of consciousness. The other side of that voice is the trickster. And the trickster says, everything I always say is a lie. Now, hidden in that is a kind of craziness, because if everything is a lie, what I just said to you is a lie, but then everything that I said is a lie, but that's a lie. So, what have I just said to you? This is Newspeak or Big Brother. Of everything I say to you is a lie. Can you believe what I say to you? That it's a lie? Right? And that's the joker. So both of those voices are going on all at the same time. This is what's happening now. Oh, but it's a lie. This is what's happening now, but it's a lie. But it's always a lie. And to get those two to speak to one another, to get the king and queen into the same room to have a little kind of committee meeting with them, is the inner work. It's the task of the inner work. We could call it going on a vision quest. So last night I had 4 points from Martin Luther King that he gave about spiritual activism. Get the facts straight, negotiate, purify, and if it's not working, then act without violence. I'd like to put them in the context of the Native American religion of this continent. So down here in getting the facts straight. Yeah? Getting the facts straight to an alchemist is called earth. And what we're trying to do in getting the facts straight is to be able to tell, is this an image or does this have meaning? Is this a being? Is this just something I can let go, I don't have to pay attention to, or do I really have to pay attention to this? Now, in Native American teachings, young people were given a name. Their parents would give them a name. And the name was known as a totem. The totem represented a kind of tendency that the person had. If they were to be called a little bear, the bear was known to go to hibernate, so the little bear consciousness would be a kind of child that was a little bit inward, a little quiet, kind of liked to play by themselves, things like that. Little eagle. Eagle is the being that sees far in the distance. So this would be a little sanguine who knew everybody's business in the whole village. Yeah, you would be given a totem that would describe a little bit of how you were living in the world. And that would be your name. But the purpose of youth and education was to do a practice called stalking the totem. So in stalking the totem, if it was a bear, as a young person, you and an adolescent, you had to go and learn the habits of that animal that was your totem. You had to stalk it. You had to learn where it was eating and how it was eating and how it was moving, how it procreated, when it moved in the morning, in the evening, or however. How to live in a family unit. You had to find out all those things. You had to stalk the totem in order to understand why it was that this is what your name was. And if you did that, you would see the positive aspects of the animal you were stalking, and you would also see some things which were a little less than wonderful. You'd see some, maybe some violent things or things you didn't understand, some kind of crazy things that if you did that, in the family circle, the people would say, you know, you need to just not do that anymore. And it would be just coming out of your totem. Yeah. Instead of tearing the place up all the time like a bear on a rampage, you have to kind of chill out a little bit. Or instead of going in everybody's business, you have to kind of pay attention to your own business. So you would have the task as a young person of stalking the totem until you began to understand why it was that you had that name. And when that happened in your inner life, you were ready for the next phase. And the next phase was called crying for a vision. In crying for a vision, you would gather four elders who you loved or who you trusted, and they would have a ritual. They would take all your clothes from you and give you a robe or a blanket, and they would sit you out in the wilderness somewhere by yourself, no food, no water, no people, until you got afraid, until you got a little fearful and started to get anxious. And then in your soul, you would be feeling this need that out of the learning that you did in stalking your totem, there needed to be something that was changing. Usually this was one of the phases of adolescence, going into adolescence. You would have to stalk your totem as a young person and then learn that that totem needed to change in order for you to be an adult. That would set you crying for a vision. And the vision was, who could I be if I worked past my totem? That's really the task of the adolescent. Who could I be if I was not just Little Bear? Who am I going to be in the future? So you were sent into the wilderness crying for a vision until you had an experience of an animal come and coming and speaking to you. Or a vision would happen. You would have an inner experience. Some being would come, and you would have an understanding that this was a being who was a guide to who you were going to become. Once you had that crying for a vision, you would have to come back and you would have to go through a ritual to receive a new name. And the part of the ritual that was the most important was one of the basic tenets of Native American church, and that was called giveaway. Now, in the giveaway, what you had to do was give away your old name. But the way they did it was very profound. The four people that you gathered before you went out and cried for a vision would meet with you when you came back, and you would tell them what animal spoke to you. And they would meet with each other, and then they would have a giveaway. And the giveaway was that you could put your old name to death in order to receive a new name. And the way they put the old name to death was they would sit around you in a circle and tell you one by one what all your problems were. How you got in trouble, how you affected people, how people reacted to the way you were acting, etc., etc., etc. They would break down your old name. And then they would send you out. And then you'd have to chew on that a little bit. And then they would bring you back. And then when they brought you back, they would have a new shield painted with your new totem. And then they would tell you all the things that they loved about you, what they thought was strong in the way you lived. And in that way, you could put to death your old name and receive your new name and then begin to act out of your new name. And as you acted out of the new name, you understood the basis of having an animal totem, which was to transcend. The totem. You had to transcend your animal nature to become more human. But your new name was probably some kind of animal name, and you had to go then through the cycle again to learn and stalk that totem. Perhaps if you were fortunate enough, you would go on a vision quest a second or maybe even a third time. If you went a second or a third time, you would be a chief or a healer or a priest or a shaman or something like that. So the purpose was to continually reinvent yourself and get new names, but you had to kill the old name in order to get the new name, meaning you had to assimilate the shadow element of the past in order to become the light for the future. Now, in the center of this, this transcending the totem, if I transcend all the totems, who do I become? Well, then I become the hero or the heroine. And the hero or heroine lives in another realm. They live in a myth realm, even though they're here on Earth. This is a great chief or a great healer or a great statesman among the people was a hero. And they would take the name of older heroes. And what they would be doing when they would take the name of older heroes is they would be showing the fruits of the giveaway. And the fruits of the giveaway were gratitude for your trials. So the purpose of all of this enculturation was to be able to get to a spot in my own life where instead of being afraid of losing my freedom, instead of being afraid of what was coming from the future, I could build into myself a tolerance for the unexpected, a tolerance for understanding that every trial is simply part of a great process. It's what we lack so much as modern people when we have light switches that instantly turn on and off. We've lost a sense of that it takes timing to build forces. And so I would say what I've found in young people as a shadow element is a great impatience for the slowness it takes for changes to happen. At the same time, it's a great force to get things to happen. So there's a shadow and a gift. And so there's a practice that I would like to suggest to you that can be used to overcome fear. The greatest force in us that overcomes fear is gratitude. I had a friend who was on the edge of being an alcoholic, and he said he realized he had a problem when he was finishing his six-pack for the day and worrying about tomorrow's six-pack. It was a kind of unsettled something. Even though he was satisfied, he wasn't satisfied. And that anxiety, that's fear. That is, tomorrow I will not have what I need in order to do what I need to do. Or basically, tomorrow things will be different. But in my world, that's, you know, I'll be 61 soon, and every day has been, it's going to be different tomorrow than it is today. And a lot of my energy has been frittered away worrying about the fact that it's going to be different. But hopefully by now I have a little sense that it's going to be different. Get a life. You know, get over it. It's not personal. It's going to be different. So in order to build that force, that it's going to be different, but it'll be okay, there's an exercise that I share with students in my program called the Corn Hero. So in the center here, the being who is always in contact with these changes is a being that is continually changing with the changes and is not upset by the fact that things are changing. That's the hero or heroine. And the reason why they're a hero or heroine is because they can see the wisdom in the trial. They can see the reason for having the difficulty. The difficulty becomes a teacher, so to speak, rather than an enemy. And in order to develop a capacity for that, to expect the unexpected, or to make a gift out of my problem, I need to cultivate in myself consciously, daily, a little sense of gratitude, especially for small things. So the Corn Hero works like this. I pick something, say, that I have for breakfast. And I try to imagine what that looked like just before it came to me. So this morning I had some bread. And it was bread that was not pre-cut. It was a nice loaf with seeds and nuts in it. So I would try to imagine somebody actually cutting that bread for me. And there it was. It was nicely cut. It was all on the plate. I didn't do it. It may be there tomorrow or it may not. I don't know. But here, while it's here, and I have it with me, something very beneficent, something very wonderful has come from somebody else towards me as a kind of gift to my incarnation. It's a piece of bread. For a lot of people in the world, that's not a given in the morning. It's not given that there'll be a piece of bread on the plate. I may have to do a little dumpster diving to get my bread in certain parts of the world. So someone has provided for me this bread, and they've cut it. Now, I can pretty much look at the bread and say, somebody cut it. So I have in me a certain kind of feeling that someone was involved with this. So what I do is I form in myself an inner picture of the person who cut the bread. Maybe it was Sally. It doesn't matter if the person's name was Sally or Bob or Frank or Adrian or whatever. It doesn't matter. What matters is that in my heart, I feel gratitude for them doing that, even for a brief moment. And I express gratitude to that person for cutting the bread and putting it on the plate. I try to picture them doing it, and I try to live with my will into what they did, and I thank them. And then the next day I show up, and maybe there's another piece of bread. So now my task is to spread my gratitude. So now I thank Sally or Adrian for cutting it, and then I think about the person that put the sunflower seeds in there that made it. Is that the latest thing? Well, no, actually, you know, somebody had to truck it in from the bakery. So I thank the trucker that trucked the bread that Sally cut and put on my plate. And then the next day, if the bread is there, well, then maybe I go back to the baker. And then if the next day, maybe I go back to the person that grew the flower or the person that grew the sunflower seeds or whatever. And pretty soon, when I come to get my bread in the morning, I'm expressing gratitude to a whole host of people who are, quote, unknown to me consciously, but very known to me in my own heart. And that is called changing your heart or turning your will. And one of the greatest forces for turning your will is to somehow, in your imagination, express gratitude for things that you take for granted. The great fear that we have in a culture where we have a lot of things is that we won't have them tomorrow. Just think the word oil. And think about that. And think about how much anxiety and fear is being generated around oil. In order to rally the people, governments need enemies. They want us to be afraid, to hate, so that we will rally behind them. And if they do not have a real enemy, they will invent one. Okay, this is fear. And we can't really fight fear out there. Because the fear isn't out there. It's in us. So if we wish to fight it, we can't even really fight it. But we can face it. We can look at it. And we can give it something to do. And the thing that causes the fear to have something to do that heals it is to express gratitude for something where we normally just accept it. So this thing with the bread, you can do the same thing with the gasoline that goes into your car. So if you really want to have an interesting time at the pump instead of freaking out about $3.32 a gallon, start going back through the chain of how the gas gets to you and thank the people that are allowing this thing to happen. And you'll find that in your soul, kind of existential guilt and fear starts to come under control. It never really gets obliterated because there's a purpose for it. I'll read you another quote about that one. This is really pretty hot. This is from Marilyn Ferguson, the author of The Aquarian Conspiracy. You can fight wars over oil, but where do you drop bombs if you want to tackle climate change? That's a problem that can only be solved through international cooperation. So climate change could very well turn out to be the match that ignites the period of great transformation. So this is gratitude for the problem. She's expressing gratitude for the problem of global warming because it may finally be the match that opens the fire of cooperation internationally because we all realize we're all part of the same thing. Yeah, this is just an example of what I mean about fear and anxiety over things you can't control or the supply is going to be cut off, so maybe we can't, you know, we can't open up the strategic oil reserve, or maybe we can, or maybe we can't, you know, we'll have to see, or whether or not maybe there will be another hurricane which will threaten the strategic oil reserve, and maybe we're not, or yeah, wow. And so that's that thing in us that is kept off balance and stressed by the uncertainty of where is this thing going to move? Is it going to go this way or that way? That is in the soul, that is fear. Rudolf Steiner says it's one of the beasts that live in the soul of every person on the whole world. Every person in the whole world has some kind of fear. So, that's the problem, so to speak, and a little bit about a solution. So now we'll play a game with our friends. So the game this time is called washing the mirror. So with your partner, you're going to wash the mirror. And we'll do this with Ron. So Ron's my partner, and he's my mirror image. And I'm...
Okay.
Okay. And what I'm going to do is, I see there's something on the mirror, and I'm going to go and try to wash the mirror. Okay. Who's in control? Okay. See, he now, thank you, he's put in a position where I'm leading and he must follow. He's doing giveaway. You must follow my lead. You must give away your freedom. You can do anything you want, right? Mm-hmm. But I say, I want you to do this. I'm having a good time here. Yeah. So I am the being that is the image. All right? And I'm washing the mirror. But now the mirror is going to wash me. Okay. Now we've had a flip here. So what you're going to do with your partner is first you're going to be the person and you decide who that will be. They become the image. You wash the mirror. Then you switch so you can get the feeling for it. And then in the third mode, neither of you is a designated being or image. You're both trying to respond to being a being and an image. And what I'd like you to do is to see who can follow in that open period. And then after you do that, I would like you to write just a little bit about how it feels and then have a very brief conversation with your partner about the mode. Okay? Any questions about this? Okay, very good. So I just heard a statistic that 5% of the people in the United States control 32 or 33% of the wealth of the world. That's big.
94% of the wealth in this country is controlled by 29,000
people. Yeah. Yeah, so there, the scholars who are looking at these things, what they're saying is that leadership or, quote, leaders are, the power of leadership is being concentrated into less and less and less and less of the population. There's a movement to make more and more power for less and less people. Now, this country was founded on the idea that it's just the opposite. and that leaders, all people in their own walk of life, every individual should be a leader at something, doing something, taking some initiative. And if everybody is taking some initiative, everything will get done. So there's a kind of battle going on, similar to washing the mirror. So when you're in control and you're the one that's saying, go over here and do this and go over there and do that, there's not much of a problem. But when you're in the giveaway situation, it's fun to begin with. But suppose you were in the giveaway day after day after day, and your spot in the giveaway was simply to be reactive to whatever was coming down. After a while, something would start to come into your consciousness that would resist the giveaway. And in a lot of ways, Colin Powell said the real problem of terrorism is poverty. It's not a political thing. And the real problem with global warming is moral, according to Al Gore in his latest film. So these issues here of who's in control, who's not in control, who's the being, who's the image, who's making things happen, who's the one that has to do whatever is said, these are very big issues. They are fundamental to the human experience of I look in the mirror and there's me, but it's not me, but it kind of looks like me, but I make it do whatever I want. In the ancient world, it was understood that the leader had to be a servant of the wisdom of the people. And it was only when that was lost that we get the tyrant or the petty tyrant. And so in Anthroposophy, Rudolf Steiner's work is to focus on the issue of human freedom and the whole question of the will of an individual and say that that must be schooled in such a way that instead of my self-will to power, I have to learn to have gratitude for the things that won't allow me to assert my self-will to power in order that I can become again part of the collective, part of the dream of the queen. So these images of the king and the queen having to speak to each other in order to give rise to the baby. The baby is what Rudolf Steiner would call the I, the ego. Jung called it the true self. It resides as a seed in every person waiting to be uncovered so that the destiny of the person can unfold in the world in a strong way. And I couldn't think of a better audience to talk about destiny and unfolding of the true self than to young people such as yourself. So, have a good day.